Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, it's Joe, and welcome to another episode of Test Talks. Today we'll be speaking with Neeraj Tripathi about his principles of effective software quality management. What I really like about this week's episode is Neeraj has a ton of experience with software quality management. He's worked across multiple organizations on many teams cross-functionally, and I think his breadth of knowledge really shines through in this episode. So if you're having issues with software quality management, get ready for some knowledge bombs because Neeraj really shares actionable advice for almost every single question I asked him. So check it out. Test Talks is sponsored by the fantastic folks at Sauce Labs, the cloud-based automated testing platform that eliminates the need to maintain your own Selenium grid and test infrastructure. Try it for free today. Visit testtalks.com and click on the Sign Up Now link under the homepage sponsor section. Hey, Neeraj, welcome to Test Talks.
Thank you.
It's great to have you on the show. Today, I'd like to talk about your principles of effective software quality management. But before we get into it, can you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Sure, Joe. First of all, thank you for inviting me for this interview. I'm excited to share what I have learned in industry. About myself, I've been in IT industry for 20 plus years now. I was fortunate to start my career with IT consulting companies, and working for these IT consulting companies really allowed me to work with different clients, different domain, and spread across a globe with the new problem and challenges. So that really helped me to build the perspective of overall SDLC. And last 10 years, I've been focused on software quality assurance for different client, as well as myself leading large QA organization where I set up QA from scratch. So that's kind of my experience in a QA world.
What I'd like to start with is your four principles or key areas that you focus on within your principles of effective software. I thought we'd go through each one and take it from there. I believe that the first one is customer experience. Now, I know this can mean many things to many people. How do you define what is customer experience?
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that it means a different thing for different folks. And I want to focus our conversation on software quality assurance. And my perspective on customer from a QA organization perspective, that QA, a quality assurance organization, is a best buddy or should be best buddy with the customer. The reason being, when organization building a software, obviously they have an idea or concept to promote that in a market, but when they are going through that idea or the process of building the solution, most of the time the nitty-gritty things get missed or it gets diverted. And what I really want, and that's what I preach to my team, is the QA organization, only thing they need to do is keep the customer perspective in their mind. What customer is really looking for? So they should be basically not only looking at the customer requirement, they should be putting themselves in a customer's shoes and thinking about, if this solution we are providing to customer, how they can consume. What are the different scenario they should be using this solution? So that's kind of, when I say customer experience, very important for QA organization to wear that customer hat and think about all the possible scenarios and then build those scenario in their test designing and test execution so that they can eliminate as many defects as possible, and then they can increase a better user experience for their customer.
Awesome. I love your answer, and I definitely agree that more and more teams really need to stop focusing on the customer first and then take it from there before they really even write a line of code. So I'm just curious to know, in your experience, how do you get there? Do you use anything like behavior-driven development, or is there another technique that you recommend for this approach?
Yeah, so behavior-driven development, I highly support that, because that's, I won't say it's the latest or greatest. I think it's been there for long now. Organization has started using those very extensively. So I definitely support that is very important to keep the customer perspective. The other thing which I would always recommend for a quality assurance organization, that if their customer or their consumer are a general public, obviously they can wear that hat very easily and try to simulate what scenarios they can go through by creating some user profile, some visual diagram. They can do a lot of technique to really simulate the customer behavior. But when their users are a specific group with their specific need, I think that's where it becomes challenging for QA team to understand what customer really wants and what kind of behavior they are expecting. So in those kind of scenario, what I have encouraged in the past to my client and my team is QA team should not only be just participating on the requirement session, they should be integral part of the operational meeting. And when I say operational meeting, is typically the sales team and the business operation, they have a very regular cadence of meetings to understand what kind of operational issues we have, what kind of enhancement requests we are having from our customer. So QA being upfront into those discussion and contributing to those discussion helps them to understand the customer perspective. So in addition to what you just mentioned, the behavior-driven development, that's a great tool and technique, but on a day-to-day basis, the operational meeting and having an exposure to real customer is what really helps QA team to build that perspective.
So what would you think would be good quality? You know, is it always just good quality is making the customer happy? Or are there some other key indicators a team can use to make sure they're on track to really make sure that they're giving the customer a great experience?
Yeah, and to be frank, nowadays it's easy to measure the customer experience as it's been before because of the social network and the social media. You can easily, if you are building an app, by rating of your app, you know that your user experience is better on the app. And the other measurement, irrespective of you are in social media or not, it is your customer retention and the getting a referral is key measurement in terms of your quality and user experience. So that matrix is directly proportional. If you're getting a more referral on your product, it means your user experience is better and the vice versa. And same thing with your retention percentage of your customer. If you can retain many customer on your application for your product, I think that's important matrix for quality or customer perspective too. I don't know how much it is true. I was reading an article recently that nowadays folks, if they are using a new app or new application, if it doesn't perform for a couple of seconds, they just move on to the next one. And then start using that. And that's a key matrix for a customer experience, that if they went to your site or your app and you were not able to provide that experience, the chances are they will never come back. So those kind of matrix are key to measure how are we doing in terms of retaining users and increasing the user experience.
And once again, another great point. Once we've focused on the customer and we get feedback from our customers, the next piece of your principles of effective software quality management is enabling environments. What is an enabling environment?
So this is one of the key area when we talk about the principle of effective quality management. I think most of the time, and I'm not saying that this is done intentionally, because of different priorities and the cost challenges, many organizations or many leaders are not able to build the environment where they can best leverage their resources. Means for any application to be built, ultimately it's been built by human resources, and there are other resources, which is hardware, tools, and all. And so it's important for a quality manager and leader to build the enabling environment. And it's not like a one formula or one hat fits all the head in the enabling environment. There are things which needs to be done in a manner where resources within the team feels empowered, feels that they can do the right thing, and they feel that they are accomplished by doing particular thing. So let me go into detail. Like one of the thing which as a leader, they should be doing to enable their resources to do better job in a quality world is having them involved actively. And when I say actively QA involvement, well, what I have seen is many QA team or QA team members, they will get involved whether in an operational meeting or the requirement phase when they go into those meetings, and their involvement will be very passive because their mindset is, my turn is not yet come. My turn is when the development will deliver the product to me. I will test it. I'll find the defect. That's where I will be more active. And the leader has to change that mindset. They need to make sure when these resources, QA resources, joining these early meeting, they are actively contributing. And now to do that, what I have really worked for me, and I'm sure other leaders can use different techniques, what I have done is I made sure that when these team members are joining those conversation, they have the document called requirement ambiguity or test condition, something they need to come out of those meeting and start delivering, so that when they are sitting in those meeting, they are asking question, they are documenting the understanding, that way the requirement quality improves, as well as understanding on those requirement and challenges, the QA is better prepared. So the reason I call it as enabling is those same conditions, those same questions, those same techniques, they can apply in their designing of test cases and the testing of those test cases, like a test execution, so that you are enabling your team to be more knowledgeable in terms of requirement and you can do better job in a quality. Another thing which I mentioned here and talked to you before, I believe, is we can continue to do whatever is best available in the industry, but industry itself keep changing. Like in IT, as you and I have seen, things changes dynamically. So the resources on the team, they have to work together. They have to be innovative. And what does it mean is innovation does not mean that they have to come up with a scientific formula every 6 months. The innovation means they need to find a way to be more productive, cost effective, and maybe some automation. So they need to constantly think about how we can really reduce the cost, we can speed up the market so that we can produce our product or do the testing faster so that we can deploy it to market. So those innovation, we as a leader needs to encourage and give some ideas so team can do those innovation. And I talked about empowerment, but I'll ask the focus, Joe, is the empowerment is another important thing. You need to build future leaders. You need to enable them by giving the right tool and helping them to make the right decision. So again, I spoke too much on this, but this is kind of very close to my heart. This is every QA leader needs to really think about how they can empower their resources and the best utilize them in a QA world.
I think this is the key piece here, because when I think of enabling environments, I think of culture. And if you have a toxic culture, it doesn't matter what initiatives you're trying to get through. It's never going to get done correctly. For example, you know, I work with a team where there's QA resources that are saying, we need this information from this other team. But they're being told, no, you need to go to the Scrum Master, and your Scrum Master needs to work with their Scrum Master before you can even talk to any of the team members. It's actually not enabling this environment where it empowers people to take initiative and talk to other people across other teams. So how do you get around this? How do you build in this culture of quality, not only enabling them, but also, I don't know, this is the hardest piece. I don't know. Any tips around the culture piece of it?
Yeah. So first of all, you gave a great example, Joe, I think where folks are not able to get the information because of the organizational boundaries. So you're absolutely right. So a couple of things. One is, and I'm just going to give an example where how things worked really, really well for me in the past. First, let's talk about the boundary part. So there is a lot of scenarios where the QA organization will draw their own boundary, development will draw their own boundary, a business analyst team will draw their own boundaries. I think what is more important from a leadership perspective is the setting the matrix or the measurement which are more focused towards the achieving the goal rather than individual performance. Because when individual performance get affected or get highlighted doing this kind of job, they start drawing those boundaries. So that's the kind of thing which really helped me to set those kind of goals where organization has the same goal, whether it's a dev, BA, and QA. But let's go a little bit more down level in terms of how it's really worked. So when I talked about active QA involvement early in the requirement, what really helped those active QA involvement is sharing those documentation, sharing those understanding with BA, because they are ultimately, and when I say BA, business analyst team, because they are the one who are documenting those requirements, and they want to make sure that they have the solid requirement. So QA not only helping themselves, they are helping their BA partner to solidify the requirement. Other thing which really worked is when we go into the defect or test execution phase, really going defect back and forth, whether it's a defect or not defect, what really worked is forming a triage team where we have a representation from a development and QA and the BA, and their matrix, the triage matrix or the measurement, what really worked is how soon they can allocate defect to the right resource for the quick resolution. So when you start using those matrix for a team, you're not using for an individual, and in that team you have a BA, dev, and QA, the whole shifting on how things should work, it changes. The environment gets changed. So again, this is my experience, how you can really set those goals by a team other than individual resource, really work to build that kind of environment.
So another key area that you go over in your principles is repeatable and reusable. How do repeatable and reusable play into your principles?
Yeah, so this is another good aspect and great example I'll just give you very recently. If you have followed the news, the SpaceX team, they reuse their fuel tank, means which costs, I think, the millions of dollars every time we put that in the ocean.
Exactly, yep.
It applies to everywhere. In the QA world, I think it's a similar thing. If we are building test cases or automation every time from a scratch, that's not productive. It's a counterproductive. So when I think QA team or QA leaders sit down and review the organization, they need to find processes and tools which can be repeatedly used. And take an example, if they are building an automation in the organization and they have 10 different lines of business, and if 10 different lines of business using a different automation tool, the chances are when they want to put together a product which communicates with each of these lines of business, these automation scripts are not going to function because it will require extra step for them to communicate and the integration will be tough. So from the repeatability or reusability perspective, the leader or whoever the team lead from the QA organization perspective needs to think about, if I'm choosing a tool, is that tool consistent across my organization? So tool selection becomes an important. When I'm selecting a tool and building a framework, is this framework scalable given my organization or size, so that if I need to continue to increase my automation and maintain the script, can I do this particular tool or this framework? So that's where I call it as a repeatable and reusable. So if you build a framework and you can just keep building on for those automation, that's definitely the right thing to do. Similarly, if you have your the test team or QA team who are using, just very simple example for everybody, if they every time they are using a login to their application to start testing, do we really need to do that manual? If every 10 tester or 200 tester, they need to log in into application to start testing, those kind of things should be automated right away. So that's where I think it becomes very important to start identifying areas which can be automated. If these are repeatable, absolutely, that's a candidate for automation. If there are processes which can be eliminated, we should look into that as well. And then if there are functions which can be reusable, I think even for test cases, and I'm not saying it's only automation, even for manual test cases, if you have a test case for one particular product And similar test cases you are using for other product, you don't need to write it. You need to build your test case framework in a such a manner that you should be leverage what is already there. So those are the couple of things a team in a QA world, they should be thinking and doing every 6 months, identifying what I can reuse and what I can repeat.
Also, like you said earlier, if you're reviewing every 6 months, there could be some pruning going on. And a lot of times, to me, it seems like teams seem to just add more and more things on. I think it's sometimes good to look at something and actually say, this may have made sense 6 months ago, but where are we now? Does it still make sense? If it doesn't make sense, just delete it, because all it's doing is creating more noise.
You're absolutely right. And the great example I'll tell you, in a QA world, they try to create a lot of a test data script because they want to create the consumer, they want to create different scenario. And if they are not reviewing this test data script every 6 months, and even if they can do even more frequent, better, those scripts keep creating data, and it becomes a challenge to maintain that data, as well as those scripts may not be valid. So your point is absolutely right. A periodic review and enhancement of what processes, whether it's repeatable, reusable, we have put together is key to the success.
Awesome. I know we mentioned functional automation, but there's a lot of other automation that teams have been working with now to set up environments for them. Now, I think this might also help feed the enabling the environment section that you have, where if teams have an automated script that actually can build their test environments for them automatically, if they don't have to worry about that, they can almost empower them to focus on things that they do best and automate the things that can be automatable and repeatable. It doesn't necessarily need to be a functional test. Anywhere you can use automation, you should. And that in turn will enable you to have a better environment to work in.
Yeah, Joe, great point. And I think with that goes also not only building the environment, even the testing your environment that it's built up right, like using some smoke script is key for that automation, and that it saves a lot of time for teams. Another example can be many organizations today, Joe, they work in an on-site offshore model. And what happens is somebody builds the environment, say in the United States, and they go back home, and then offshore team supposed to pick that environment up. But if nobody has done the smoke testing and that to be in automated fashion, then I think the offshore team loses the entire day because there were no scripts to verify the environment is up and running or not, right? Other thing, Joe, I will add is when you talked about this build an environment is the continuous integration. So if you see many team today, they want to move towards continuous integration, and the QA team can be a great contributor there, and that falls into repeatable and reusable. What I see is QA team, typically they build a lot of regression test cases, and obviously then they want to automate those to ensure that the things which were working before still works. But I think the same regression script what QA is building, if they can start sharing with their development counterpart and start having those scripts run in a continuous integration environment, those defects can be found very early and those can be eliminated early as well. So that's where, again, it comes also like how they can work together and help each other. So it's not only QA who is just testing, they are helping their development team to build product with the less defect. So that's what I want. I'm glad you mentioned that. So I wanted to bring the continuous integration aspect as well.
Cool. Along the same lines of continuous integration and automation, I think this leads really well into your last point, which is time to market. When we talk about CI automation, is that what you mean by time to market?
Yeah, that's definitely one of the aspects where we can left shift quality. That means we can find defects early, we can eliminate defects early. So then we are reducing a time to market. See, other important aspect for Joe from a time to market perspective is, and I touched upon in this topic, is how prepared your QA team and how engaged your QA team from day one helps in terms of having a right kind of script. When I say right means, and I continue to use that, the test less and test smart. That means is you need to write a less number of test cases, but you should be finding a more defect. That's called kind of test case effectiveness. So if QA team is writing a test cases and scenario which are going to hit into only one particular area and don't have a broader coverage, the chances are you are writing test cases and executing test cases, but you are not covering your product. So continuous integration, one aspect. Your test case effectiveness is definitely a second aspect in terms of how well and how early you can test. And the other aspect is your cycle time. So cycle time depends on two things. One is obviously when you're running your test scenario, is your test scenarios are automated or not. That obviously affect your cycle time. At the same time, when you are using the right kind of tools to log your defect, where you can provide a better description, you provide the screenshot, you provide what really you were doing when this defect occurred, that helps development team to really debug and resolve their defects early. And that's why I continue to say working together, finding those right kind of tools are very, very important. Otherwise, QA team will spend time to explain how and when they found defect. Development team will have to spend time to reproduce that defect. So that's kind of a third aspect where the defect management and the using the right tool can speed up your time to market. And that is obviously affect your cycle time. Now, other aspect from a time to market perspective, we already touched upon the automation, but more important is how good your regression is, because there will be scenario where you really want to deploy early, because if it's a priority one defect, or if there is an enhancement which is waiting for a long and customer cannot wait any longer, you want to move things early into production. But at the same time, you cannot compromise with quality. That means you have to have a better regression test suite where you feel comfortable and confident that you covered your business critical function, you covered your security breach kind of function, and you're not compromising quality on those area. And that way you can run that entire regression test suite in an automation fashion, and you should be able to deploy early. And then obviously continuous integration we already talked about. So these are the couple of things will enable team to really speed up time to market in terms of reducing the QA times and QA cycles.
Awesome. You know, I really want to focus in on this point again that you made about less test cases. I think this is an overlooked aspect. I think it's really critical because I've seen teams that create more and more and more tests without looking to say, you know, are we repeating anything? Number one. And number two, do we still need this? This actually kills your time to market. If you're trying to run your whole test suite and you have all these extra tests not really adding any value, but for some reason we're impressed by the numbers of tests you're running without thinking, like you said, how effective are these tests? Are they actually covering risk? So how do we get there? How do we prune down our test cases to make sure that we have the right amount of coverage we need, but no more than what we need?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the organization a couple of years back, they had, when I walked into that organization, they had 40,000 plus test cases, and they felt proud of having those 40,000 tough test cases. And my question was, how many defects are you finding on these test cases, right?
Right.
How much time really are you spending to run these test cases? So Joy, I agree. I mean, that's kind of overlooked, but organization cannot be effective until unless they start looking into test effectiveness. And this also goes back to, Joe, another point, very recent trend in the market. What they are doing, many organizations, they are paying many vendor by number of test cases they write for their product. Like, in a Y2K time, the pricing model was line of code, right? And I started seeing now the recent, like the folks started doing the number of test cases. And in those kind of scenario, if somebody is doing that kind of pricing model, it is important that the number of scenario should not only alone be the consideration for the pricing model, it should be associated with the valid defect and the unique defect. It's not like they are same test cases finding similar defect 10 times and you say, yep, this found 10 defect. It has to be unique. It has to be valid defect. And that should be embedded into your pricing model.
Are there any books or resources you recommend to a QA professional or a tester to help them stay up to speed with the best practices and the techniques that they need in today's agile, fast-paced world?
Yeah, it means I think there are many conferences nowadays as far as the QA is concerned. I think there is a Star East, Star West, Euro Star, I believe. So there are many Star testing-specific conferences. So even if not everybody can attend, I think the QA team should be following up in terms of what are the topics the speakers are talking about. So that's important for them to understand what's happening in the world of quality assurance. The second aspect, which I highly encourage, not only for QA professional, for everybody actually in IT, to keep the eye on a digital world. Like, things are changing left and right. And I'll give you an example of why I continue to say that QA professional needs to continue to hone their skill is, take the QA team, if they are doing the devices testing or the browser testing, especially the devices testing, Joe, what I have seen is many QA organization, they continue to buy devices because QA team says, yeah, I need to test with iPad, I need to test with iPhone 6, I need to test with Android, I need to test with this. And then obviously organization think, yeah, it's important because customers are using that and they need to have those kind of devices. And after 6 months, as you know, the new devices come in. So then you probably start investing into those devices. So QA team especially needs to be knowledgeable that they are not limited to devices. There are tools available in the marketplace and few of them are open source where you can really either emulate those devices if you want to be very cost effective, or you can have really real devices used by this tool so that every 6 months you're not adding devices or buying devices to do your testing. And similarly for browser. And so that's where it's very important for the QA team to keep an eye on what's happening in industry, what kind of tools are available, and means there are so much media right now. You can read about all those tools and start encouraging your team to really review that. One thing really worked for me, Joe, is in my previous job, or previous to previous, I believe, we had a forum, quarterly forum, where we started putting a newsletter. And we had a very kind of a cadence setup where one person or two person, they will bring a new topic from the industry specific to QA world. And not only just for in general, they can put the topic there that this is what happening in the world. They should also put recommendation that how that particular new topic or new trend or new tool we can apply into our organization and what will be the impact in terms of if we apply that concept. So encouraging, again, that's an enabling environment. You're not asking everybody to really spend 2 hours or 3 hours every day. You are asking quarterly one or two person to pick a topic, review it, share with the entire team, and then just put some reward and recognition around that, and which builds up your culture and environment where they can continue to see what's happening in the world.
Okay, Neeraj, before we go, is there one piece of actual advice you can give someone to improve their software quality management efforts? And let us know the best way to find or contact you.
Yeah, so I think, again, the best advice, as I said, is a customer-centric, customer-focused, what your customer perspective is key for any QA organization. And if I need to say in one word or one sentence, they need to think about they are the best buddy of their customer and how they can help them instead of helping their own organization. So that's, I would say, is a key. And they can contact, if somebody wants to contact me, there is a personal email ID I can share with you, Joe. It's a Gmail, so I can send it to you by email and you can definitely, they can reach out to me.
Thank you, Neeraj, for your software quality management awesomeness. For links to everything of value that we talked about in this episode, head on over to testtalks.com/99. And while you're there, make sure to click on the Sign Up Now free button under the exclusive sponsor section to learn all about Sauce Labs' awesome products and services. And if this episode has helped you in any way, why not share it with a friend or coworker? Send them the link to this episode, testtalks.com/99, or point them to one of the free Android or iOS apps. So that's it for this episode of Test Talks. I'm Joe, and my mission is to help you succeed with automation awesomeness. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.